This is West Virginia Public Broadcasting. It's 744. I'm Dave Mistich. In this week's episode of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's podcast, Blankenship on Trial, host Scott Finn talks with reporter Ashton Mara and Charleston attorney Mike Hissom about the latest in the trial of former Massey CEO Don Blankenship. Blankenship is charged with conspiring to violate federal mine safety laws and lying to investors about the safety record of his company after the Big Branch mine disaster in April 2010. We start with Ashton's explanation of a key witness this week, Bobby Pauley.
So Bobby Pauley is actually the second witness that we've seen so far. She worked at the Upper Big Branch mine before the explosion. She was an underground miner, and she spoke about the conditions at UBB. She talked about things like water coming into the mine, seeing places in the mine where there was water all the way to the roof. She talked about cheating on dust samples. She said that miners were sometimes told to either remove these dust pumps that they wore on their jackets that measured the amount of coal dust in the air. They'd either remove those from their jackets and leave them in a cleaner part of the mine, or sometimes she said they were told to put them underneath their coats so that they were protected from the coal dust. She talked about this safety program at UBB called S1P2, which stood for Safety First, Production Second. She said, quote, miners at UBB scoffed at S1P2, that it was a joke to them. And the other thing that was really important about Bobby Pauley's testimony today was talk about ventilation. She admitted that she was not a ventilation expert, but said she could tell when she was underground that the air was hot, that it was stagnant. It didn't feel like it was flowing through the mine, which is a really big safety concern. The other important part about Bobby Pauley's testimony was she was one of the people who actually made phone calls. The prosecution says that people at UBB, when a mine inspector showed up, they called and warned people underground so that they could start running safely.
And this is illegal. You're not allowed to call ahead into the mine and tell them that the inspectors are coming. It's supposed to be a surprise inspection, right?
Well, MSHA officials do have to tell someone at the mine that they're going to be there. But this idea of a guard at the front gate calling the office to say an MSHA official is on site, and the office calling underground to then tell miners an MSHA inspector is here, clean up what you're doing, that is not allowed. So she actually made those phone calls and told the jury that I was directed to do this by upper level management. Chris Blanchard, the president of the mining company, stood in front of me and said, make that phone call, and watched her do it.
Mike, that's pretty damning testimony about unsafe conditions in the mine. So if you're the defense team, how do you ask her about that? How do you go about cross-examining her?
Well, the first and most important part of cross-examination today, Scott, focused on who was responsible for health and safety at the mines. The defense questions focused on the mine management level and even individual miners, asking questions along the lines of if it was up to each individual miner to look out for each other. The implication is that it's not at the corporate level where the responsibility for health and safety lies. The government did a pretty nice job of coming back to that point in the redirect of Ms. Pauley's questioning. They asked her, was there anybody at the supervisory level of Massey who wasn't responsible for health and safety? And she said, no, everybody was. And they said, did that include the CEO, Mr. Blankenship? And she said, yes. And that's where they ended with her. So that was pretty effective.
So the argument, part of it, though, is going to be that how is the CEO supposed to know what violations are going on in just one of his many mines, and that it was really up to the miners and the mine level supervisors. Is that the defense's argument, as far as you can tell?
Yes, that seems to be the approach, and that's where there are going to be other witnesses who are going to link that up. Ms. Pauley focused on her managers, on the mine level managers at Upper Big Branch at UBB. She focused on the fact that she was directed by each of those mine level managers to, as Ashton said, call out when an MSHA inspector was on site, was on the property. She also, on cross-examination, the defense walked into a trap with Ms. Pauley of some sort. They were asking her about whether she had made these calls in front of these managers, and she said yes, and she volunteered that not only she had made these calls in front of a manager named Gary May, but that she had made a call on one occasion in which Mr. May was standing next to an MSHA inspector. And Mr. May later told her that she shouldn't do that. She couldn't do that while the MSHA inspector was on site.
That was Scott Finn speaking with Mike Hissom and Ashton Mara about the latest in the Don Blankenship trial. To hear the full podcast, visit our website, wvpublic.org/Blankenship, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Search Blankenship on Trial. This is West Virginia Public Broadcasting. It's 7:49. Your forecast for today, cloudy with a bit breezy with a good chance of showers, possibly an afternoon thunderstorm. Highs are ranging from the upper 60s in the northern panhandle to the mid-70s in the southwest. For tonight, cloudy with showers tapering off, lows in the mid-40s to mid-50s. And for tomorrow, gradually clearing skies and cooler with highs in the 60s.
Support for this weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents are available at erieinsurance.com. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by State Electric Supply Company, West Virginia's total electrical solution, online at stateelectric.com.
Drug overdose deaths in West Virginia are mirroring the national trend, with heroin overdose deaths increasing rapidly, while deaths from prescription pills are leveling off or declining. That decline occurred because states have cracked down on so-called pill mills, medical offices set up to do nothing but write prescriptions for highly addictive drugs such as Oxycontin. One such pill mill in Florida is the subject of a new book called American Pain by West Virginia University journalism professor John Temple. Beth Voorhees talked with Temple about his book.
John Temple, in your previous books, you've tackled life inside a coroner's office and the legal battles surrounding capital punishment. But what made you take on the issue of pill mills and opioid addiction?
Well, it's something in my life and in my professional life that I've just seen impacting our state more and more. It's hard to find anybody who doesn't know somebody who has a problem with prescription drugs. And I've always been curious as the years have gone by, I've gotten very curious about, you know, why is this happening? And when I read about a young drug felon down in Florida who opened up his own pain clinic, hired a bunch of doctors, and then just prescribed 20 million pills to Appalachians who, you know, came from out of state, posed as pain patients, and then either used or sold the pills. You know, I thought this is like a perfect way into this story. It's a crime story, but it's also a huge public health issue.
Now, Chris George, who was the brainchild behind the American Pain Clinic in Florida, seems like a larger-than-life character. As you worked on this book, is there anything that surprised you about his story?
Well, he grew up in a wealthy family. His father was a home builder, and he had a twin brother, an identical twin brother named Jeff. And they grew up getting in a lot of trouble, repeatedly being arrested. Chris actually spent time in jail for a felony drug conviction for selling steroids before all this happened. So it was amazing to me that these two guys, you know, no college education, no medical training, could start their own pain clinics.
How did they ever convince doctors to work for them and write all of these prescriptions? What did you know about the doctors who worked at this American Pain Clinic?
Well, there were a variety of doctors there. You know, it was very interesting because some of them seemed to be the kind of doctors who maybe had a foreign medical degree and had a hard time passing boards and things, and like maybe couldn't get a job in the States. Others had, you know, distinguished careers and headed up, you know, big departments in major hospitals. So it was a wide variety. And I think some of the latter group took on these positions because they needed a part-time job because after the housing market. These were retirees in Florida. So, every doctor seemed to have his or her own story, but they ended up basically churning out one massive prescription after another for these pain pills.
We've heard that Hollywood has come calling about your book. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, Warner Brothers optioned the rights to the book and hired a screenwriter named Melissa Wallach, who co-wrote Dallas Buyers Club and was nominated for an Oscar, to write the script. And she's written the script, and they're, you know, busy working on it right now. So I don't have a whole lot of information beyond that, but I've read the script, and it's good, and it tells the story, you know, sticks pretty close to the way it really happened. So it's exciting.
Would your book, coupled with a movie like this, shed light on how addicts are getting these pills? Do you think it would be a great education for the country in what is happening out there, and perhaps provide some sort of solution to deal with it?
Yeah, you know, I think that the addictions have been created, you know, so we're going to deal with, you know, you can take the drugs away, but the addiction remains, and it's going to, you know, so these addictions are something that, you know, the people who have them are going to deal with for the rest of their lives. I mean, that just doesn't, there's no easy fix, you know, you can't just take some drugs away and then everything's fine. As a result, a lot of people are moving to heroin. It's an economic decision. I've never had an addict tell me that heroin is better than pills. You know, heroin's not better than pills. I mean, it's illegal and you don't know what's in it. So there are some serious drawbacks to heroin. In terms of the addiction, though, the two drugs, painkillers and heroin, they come from the same plant and they provide the same high and they lead to the same addiction. So it's, you know, if there's anything that people take away from this story, that's what I'm hoping people take away, is that there's not a significant difference between a painkiller addiction and a heroin addiction. So when people switch from one to the other, it's not because the one is a gateway drug to this other awful thing. It's because it's an economic decision.
John Temple, your book is American Pain, published by Lions Press. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
John Temple is a journalism professor at West Virginia University. His book, American Pain, is the subject of a panel discussion that airs Monday here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. You can hear this frank discussion about opioid addiction Monday night, October 12th at 8 o'clock. As a longtime songwriting partner of Don Henley, J.D. Souther has been involved in many hits. Here, Souther teams up with Mountain Stage favorite Nellie Mackay to cover Cole Porter's Every Time We Say Goodbye on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
I especially love the fact that I have the privilege of singing with one of my favorite musicians, Nellie Mackay. Nellie, my dear. And I have to say, by the way, she played clarinet on her album. The mistakes were all mine tonight. That part, I did my best, dear. I'm sorry. Every time we say goodbye, I die a little. Every time we say goodbye, I wonder why a little. Why the God be in the know that they think so little of me, and they allow you to go. And when you're near, there's such an air about it. I can hear a lark somewhere begin to sing about it. There's no love song finer, but how strange to change.
from major to minor. Every time we say goodbye, every time we say goodbye.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can listen to and read news stories on our website at wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback at wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. You can subscribe to the podcast of this program and many others online at wvpublic.org. Our producer is Ashton Marum. Our director is Chuck Insulevich. I'm Dave Mistich.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by WVU Arts and Entertainment, presenting Yonder Mountain String Band at the Morgantown Met Theater, October 29th. Information by calling 304-293-SHOW. That's 304-293-SHOW.